Chapter 17. Styles sleeps soundly until nearly 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Veronica has been awake for some time at that point, working on her computer and looking up details of some pro-incorporation suspects. The pack has been in and out of the pool, playing various games and just enjoying the downtime in general. Around 4, Styles starts to twitch and shudder in his sleep. Veronica looks over from where she's working, not sure if there's something she should do, if it would be better to wake him or let the nightmare run its course. Before she can do anything, Derek jogs over. He's wearing only a pair of swim trunks, although he hasn't been swimming, which he casually strips out of before shifting to his wolf form. Then he pads over and noses at Styles' face. Styles jerks awake with a little noise and nearly falls out of the deck chair, but then focuses on Derek and calms down a little, burying his face in the wolf's fur. His breathing hitches a few times, but then evens out. When he pulls away a little, Derek shifts back into his human form and runs a soothing hand over Styles' hair, down the back of his neck. He murmurs something that Veronica can't quite make out. "No, I'm okay." Styles rests his forehead against Derek's shoulder for a moment, then pulls away. "What time is it?" Since Derek obviously isn't wearing a watch, Veronica says, "It's about 4:15. "Holy crap! Why did you guys let me sleep so..." "Oh, never mind. You're all part of the same damn conspiracy," Styles grumps. He rubs a hand over his face and says, "I'm gonna take a quick dip in the pool to wake up, then we'll plan strategy." "Okay," Derek says, letting him go. Styles gets up, jogs over to the pool, and does a cannonball right next to Isaac and Scott, who both protest, laughing. General horseplay ensues. Veronica wonders at what point Styles will realize he's still wearing jeans and a t-shirt. She supposes it's possible that he simply doesn't care. He emerges about 10 minutes later, dripping wet and somewhat more coherent. "Okay, pack meeting," he declares, and waves everyone over. They gather in the shade in a loose circle, including Mac and Logan. And Scott goes inside to grab Sheriff Stalinski so he can join in too. "First things first, have I missed anything exciting while I was, you know, sleeping all day?" "Allison beat me at Risk," Lydia says, "and I will have my revenge." The pack giggles. "Veronica has resisted almost all of our attempts to make her have fun," Logan adds. "Soon I'm going to resort to wandering around half-naked like half of your pack, which, by the way, had I mentioned how much I like it here?" Erica, who is indeed currently naked, says cheerfully, "Only because the boys have been trying to spare your delicate sensibilities." Styles gives a snort of laughter and says, "Okay, okay, rein it in. Mac, how are things on your end?" "I haven't felt any urge at all to turn into a lizard or start killing people," she says. "But my parents have started asking when I'm going to be home because Mom wants to know whether or not I'll be there for dinner." Somewhat anxiously, she says, "I can't, like, live here, you know? I understand I can't be allowed to, you know, be evil, but..." Styles nods. "We need a solution that will work in at least the semi-long term. For now, why don't you tell your parents you're going to eat here, but we'll come home after dinner, and ask if it's okay for you to have a couple friends over." Mac nods and gets out her phone. Her mother is not the best at texting, so she calls home and has a quick conversation. Once she's gotten everything settled there, she hangs up and says, "So, what are we going to do?" "The good news is that I think we're actually safe for the moment," Styles says, and explains the logic that suggests the murders are over. Most of the others are nodding along. "However, we don't know that for sure, and I'm not inclined to risk something else happening. So, Mac, I hope you don't treasure your alone time very much, because for the next week or so, you aren't going to have any. Girls, I hate to dump the brunt of this on you, but I think Mac would be more comfortable with you as her watchdogs. So we're going to work out a schedule so two of us are with Mac at all times. Girls at night, guys in the afternoons after school. Mac, do your parents have a habit of barging into your room without knocking?" "Parents, no. Brother, yes." "Okay, we'll have to think about basic precautions then." Stiles taps at the arm of his desk chair. In school, it could be a bit more difficult, but I think there's at least one of us in each of your classes. Mac, tell me your schedule. Mac nods and begins to rattle it off. It turns out Stiles is right. Danny is in her computer science class. Allison and Lydia share her history class. Isaac, Boyd, and Stiles take expository writing with her. Boyd and Allison are in her French class. Stiles and Lydia both take the same calculus class. Danny and Isaac are in her study hall. And Scott is in her literature elective. Okay, Stiles says. The Canama doesn't seem to carry a phone or wear clothes, so we wouldn't be able to track her that way. But if Mac doesn't show up for one of her classes, whoever shares it with her, text me immediately, and Derek and I will track her by scent. It's not the world's best solution, but unfortunately, it's the only one I've got. It won't work forever, Danny points out, his forehead wrinkled with worry. The girls will be losing a lot of sleep if you want one of them watching her all the time. Unfortunately, you guys will have to nap in the afternoon to make up for it, Stiles says. If you need help keeping up with your schoolwork, let me know. No, Erica, that is not an invitation for you to dump all your homework in my lap, he adds, and she sticks her tongue out at him. But no, I'm aware this isn't sustainable long term. These are stopgap measures to keep Mac safe while we locate the puppet master. We've got a list of suspects to work with. Veronica's going to handle that, and I'm going to work from the supernatural side. I can't help but think there must be some way that we can use the bond the Canama has with its master to track the guy down somehow. So that's what I'm going to be working on. I need to talk to Deaton. I wouldn't put it past him to know more than he's telling us, and if I have to drive back to Beacon Hills to wring it out of him, that's what I'll do. In the meantime, I'm still waiting to hear back from Rebecca and Ravender. And I got an email from Chris who says he's going to reach out to Mikhail Aronson and some of his other hunter contacts to see if he can find anyone who's got any sort of first-hand experience with the Canama. I'll see what I can put together. Sounds reasonable, Sheriff Stilinski says. Veronica, if you need any of my resources, you let me know, okay? I'm used to working without, she says, laughing. But I will, I promise. Now that that's settled, Stiles' stomach lets out a growl. Yeah, dinner, he says. Then he frowns. I have this big thing of shrimp and scallops I was gonna make, but I guess I can't. To Logan, he says, you're allergic to shellfish, right? Yeah, Logan says. How did you even know that? I don't know. I think you mentioned it one time. We were talking about where to go for dinner, and there's this restaurant you can't go to because the shellfish gets in everything. Stiles says, and you remember that after I mentioned it one time? Logan asks, clearly surprised. Jesus, even my dad doesn't remember that I'm allergic to shellfish. Stilinski narrows his eyes and opens his mouth, probably to say something about his opinion of fathers who don't keep track of their children's allergies and or health needs. But Stiles interrupts and says casually, I try not to kill my dinner guests. But if nobody's in a hurry to eat and someone can run to the grocery store, I can make some lasagna. I've got a recipe for vegetarian lasagna I've been meaning to try anyway. That sounds good, Mac says, perking up. This is quickly agreed upon. Stiles makes a list and dispatches Lydia and Isaac to the grocery store while he changes into dry clothes and starts organizing the data he's gotten so far. Nobody knows much about the Canama, but if he combines various sources, he manages to get a fairly decent picture. There is at least one account of a Canama who was able to turn into a werewolf, and he shares that story over dinner, which makes everyone feel better. Honestly, Mac says, I think I would have gotten right over the switched at birth thing if... Her voice trails off for a few moments. If? Danny prompts. There's a pause. Then Mac viciously stabs at her lasagna and says, Fucking Madison Sinclair! Everyone considers this. Then Logan says, Actually, that seems to be a pretty valid reason to turn into a murder lizard. She's just such a bitch, Mac says, and I hate her. And it bothers me to think that my real mom, who honestly seems like a really nice person, got saddled with her when she could have had me. And that maybe Madison wouldn't have turned out to be such a horrible person and made so many people miserable if her parents hadn't overcompensated for her not being their own and spoiled her rotten. Or that the parents I have now could have wound up with such a horrible person for a daughter. Does that make sense? Actually, that all makes perfect sense, Veronica says. I didn't feel like I had an identity problem, Max says. I mean, yeah, I didn't fit in with my family, but I was still me. I guess that just wasn't enough. It's more than needing to know who you are, Stiles says. It's needing to know how you fit into the world around you, what your place is, how you're connected. This, he gestures to the pack, this is my place. Geography aside, I'm exactly where I want to be. You need to find a connection too, something that will ground you. Mac nods and settles in to think about this. After dinner, she goes back to her place with Allison and Lydia. Stiles is starting to yawn again, and Derek is not so subtly suggesting activities like a movie marathon that will surely end with Stiles asleep. I guess we'll take off for now, Veronica says. Stiles nods. Keep me posted. I'll see you Monday. Logan slings an arm around her shoulders, and the two of them leave the house. You okay? He asks her, as they head for their respective cars. A little freaked out, but yeah, Veronica says. I think I am. Things go more smoothly than Stiles would have anticipated. After some debate, Mac agrees that Danny can be included as one of the girls, which evens out the numbers and makes things easier. Allison, Lydia, Erica, and Danny take turns staying with her at night, one of them always awake in case she shifts. During the day, after school, Scott, Isaac, Boyd, and Stiles take similar shifts. Every moment he's not doing homework, Stiles is immersed in research. It's amazing what he can dredge up when he needs to. Rebecca from the magic shop in Los Angeles overnights him a package of several books that have references to the Kanema or similar shifters in it. He thinks that one of them might have a spell or spells that would enable him to track down the Kanema's master. In the meantime, Mac goes to classes and plays on her computer and everything seems fine. Veronica is neck deep in suspects and barely has time for anything else. Logan starts to feel neglected and starts showing up at the Stalinsky house after school every day. He'll splash around in the pool with the girls or play video games with Scott and Isaac, or even just sit around and do his own homework. None of them bother to ask why he's there. They know he lives alone, and it's pretty clear to all of them, who have grown up so used to looking for new pack members, that Logan is desperately lonely. He doesn't show it in the traditional ways, but it's there, a shadow in everything he says and does. Stiles would have invited him into the pack in a heartbeat, and still considers it from time to time. If he weren't with Veronica. He has no family except a father in jail and an older sister he never talks to, that he clearly despises, and no real friends. There's nothing holding him in Neptune. He gets along with everyone in the pack as well as he gets along with anyone, and his snarky sense of humor always gets Stiles laughing. He's fearless in the way that a wolf should be, because he has nothing to lose. Or at least he thinks he does. But he loves Veronica, clearly, and so he wouldn't leave her. And as much as Stiles likes Veronica, she can't be part of his pack. She's an alpha at heart, whether she has the claws or fangs or the power. She would chafe underneath somebody's rule. Of course, there's always the more long-term solution of inviting both of them and finding an alpha for Veronica to kill, so she could form her own pack and take Logan with her at that point. But Stiles thinks that might be getting a little more complicated than he would like. Still, it's worth thinking about. If they can find a way to ground Mac and help her make the full turn, she's going to need a pack. Leaving her as Omega would be cruel, and there's no local pack for her to join. All of this weighs heavily on Stiles' mind as he grinds through his research, mixing it in between calculus and his essay on the French Revolution, and his new attempts to master vegetarian cooking. When his father gets home on Tuesday evening, Stiles can see the tension in the set of his shoulders and jaw, a mix of anger and indecision. He corners his father as he takes off his gun and locks it in the safe, even though he's very aware that this wouldn't stop young fingers from getting a hold of it. Those are the rules, and if he expects the pack to follow them, he'll follow them as well. "What's up?" Stiles asks, and his father explains. Stiles grimaces, although he has to admit that he's glad it's not something to do with lizard monsters or child molesters. "All yours," he says. Logan isn't in his pack, and this is something that's not up to him to handle. His father nods, at least marginally impressed that Stiles isn't trying to interfere, and heads into the living room where Logan is watching TV with Isaac and Danny. He stops in the archway leading to the living room and waits until the occupants look up. "Logan, could I speak to you for a moment?" he asks, gesturing for Logan to follow him. "I'm innocent, I swear," Logan says, lifting his hands in surrender. "She told me she was 18. Wait, Veronica is 18. "You're hilarious, kid. Also not in trouble. But please don't tell me about your sex life." He makes a "follow me" gesture with two fingers. "He hears enough about Erica's," Danny comments, and Stilinski grimaces. "I would love to hear stories that include Erica naked," Logan says, "but alas, it looks like I'm needed elsewhere." He stands up and follows the sheriff out of the living room and into a smaller room down the hall, that Sheriff Stilinski claimed as his study, where he could have some quiet time away from teenaged werewolves. The wolves will still be able to hear their conversation, but at least they'll be able to pretend they can't. It's growing to be commonplace in the pack. There's only so much privacy one can have, living in a house with a bunch of werewolves, but common courtesy is still a must. Stilinski closes the door most of the way, but doesn't latch it, and moves further into the room, giving Logan a clear shot at the exit if he wants it. Kids with trauma don't like being trapped. Stiles, Derek, and Isaac had hammered that point home. The more he sees and learns about Logan, the more he thinks he falls into the same category. "Your father has requested to see you." Stilinski uses the term "requested" loosely, but Logan doesn't need to know that. It had definitely come across as a polite, thinly veiled command. "I want you to know that you absolutely have the right to refuse." Logan's face goes tight and pinched as soon as his father comes up, but then relaxes into his normal wise-ass grin. "Absolutely," he says. Apparently nobody told him that the sheriff doesn't like playing errand boy for him. He shrugs and adds, "If I refuse, he'll just set his dogs on me. Lawyers, I mean. So whatever, name the time and place." "You name the time and place," Stilinski says. "As far as I'm concerned, he's asking for a favor." "Well, the place would have to be prison. And as far as I'm concerned, the time can be now, or at least tomorrow after school, so I can get it over with. Sooner rather than later." Stilinski nods. "I'll let them know to expect you after school tomorrow. But if you change your mind, you let me know."
"Yeah, cool,"
Logan says. He hesitates, then says, "But, last time they put us, like, in a room together at a table, we didn't have, you know, the glass wall and the telephone. I guess they thought, you know, family visit. But I really kind of prefer the glass wall, you know, between me and the guy who murdered my girlfriend." "Then that's what you'll have," Stilinski assures him. He's careful to keep his tone and expression free of any sort of judgment, although a bit of quiet approval slips in.
"Cool, yeah, okay."
Logan shakes his head a little and heads for the door. Stilinski lets him step out of the room before following. Isaac is sitting in the hallway, leaning back against the wall, his knees loosely drawn up, elbows resting on them. He looks up as they leave the study and then pushes himself up so he's standing. Then gives a slightly apologetic shrug, because it's obvious that he was listening. "I'll go with you tomorrow," he says. It's more of a statement than an offer.
"Okay, but his autographs don't come cheap,"
Logan says.
"I'll bring my piggy bank,"
Isaac says, deadpan. Logan opens his mouth to say something, then shakes his head a little and says,
"Whatever frosts your cupcake, buddy." then heads back into the living room. But his pulse is slowing down, and the smell of him is calmer, less tense and angry. Isaac takes that as a win, since he had been halfway sure that Logan would try to argue him coming. Logan doesn't say anything about it at all the next day, but he isn't surprised to see Isaac waiting at his car at the end of the day. He just shrugs and gets behind the wheel. Buckle up! Isaac puts the seatbelt on without hesitation. The incident where Styles' brakes had been sabotaged had taught him to love seatbelts. Logan shakes his head a little and thumbs through his CDs. Rap, rock, or heavy metal? He asks, then says, I'm just kidding. I hate rap. He shoves an album into the stereo, and a few minutes later, Nine Inch Nails starts to blare through the speakers, the bass notes loud enough to be felt rather than heard. Isaac startles, jerking back into his seat. Holy shit! His hands come up, but sort of flap ineffectually, like he isn't sure whether he wants to cover his ears or paw at the stereo. Logan reaches out and cranks the volume down. Werewolf hearing, right? He asks, and shrugs. Turn it up as loud as you can stand it. I'll survive. Yeah, I mean, we're biologically wired to be able to handle loud noises, or we'd be crippled. But there are limits. Isaac reaches out and starts gradually turning the music up. By the time he's done, it's pretty loud, even though it doesn't actually rattle the windows. Logan obviously doesn't want to talk, so Isaac respects that. And the music drowns out the nervous, angry thud of Logan's heartbeat, several notches higher than usual. The guard at the front desk clears them both through, and Logan sits down at the desk with the phone. Isaac leans against the wall behind him. A normal person wouldn't be able to hear the conversation that's about to transpire, but he will. Aaron Eccles comes out a few minutes later and gives Logan that same disingenuous smile that's charmed so many ladies. It's good to see you, son. Yeah, we should do this more often, Logan says. Then, without missing a beat, hey, look at the time. Gotta go. Isaac isn't sure what he expected, but it wasn't that smile. It's wrong somehow, and he thinks his fur would be standing up if he were to shift forms. He thinks Logan's last statement is the smartest thing he's said all week. Logan, please sit down. Aaron says. He takes a deep breath as Logan sinks reluctantly back into his chair. I know you're angry at me. Gee, Dad, what gave you that idea? But I'm still your father, and I'm trying to look out for you, even from here. Isaac feels his eyebrows climb at this. It's a ridiculous statement, really, but the man's heartbeat is rock steady. Wow, I'm touched, Logan says, putting his free hand against his heart. Where was this concern for me the last 17 years? I know I've made mistakes, Logan. Actually, I'm pretty sure the word mistake implies that it was an accident or unintentional. So no, I don't think you've made any mistakes at all, unless you include getting caught. Aaron sighs. Logan, please, I just want to talk to you about the trial. Isaac continues to watch silently, wondering how this is in any way looking out for Logan, and he really wants to let his lip curl back to show his teeth, but he doesn't. He just watches Aaron like he's prey. What about it? Logan asks, one hand tapping restlessly against the arm of his chair. I'm concerned about the impact it could have on you. After all, if you get up on the stand, you may say things you'll regret later, especially when I'm acquitted. You could be accused of perjury. There are legal consequences. Dad, if you're acquitted, being charged with perjury is the least of my concerns. Logan says, and he's calm on the surface, but Isaac can hear his heartbeat spinning out of control. Smell the fear, the anger, the agony that's underneath it all. What's it like in this fantasy world where you're going to be acquitted? Logan, you know that the prosecution doesn't have a solid case. Yes, the tapes prove that I had sex with Lily, but not that I killed her. Well, Dad, given your history of violence... What history of violence? Aaron's looking dead into his son's eyes. Is that something you're going to talk about on the stand? Isaac moves forward, fully prepared to end this travesty of a family visit. But Logan waves him off. With the same casual tone, he says, "Oh, well, the lawyers have briefed me at length about how I shouldn't bring up things I can't prove, and since you usually didn't leave scars, that only leaves me with a few options, like the cigarette burns." "I think that's outside the statute of limitations," Aaron says, smiling again. "I'm sorry, but are you mistaking me for someone who gives a shit? I'm testifying, Dad. Get over it."
Aaron shakes his head a little. "I think you're making a mistake. You know it'll make Veronica look bad, too. Just another guy in her string of rich boyfriends."
"You shut the fuck up about Veronica!" Logan snaps, and Isaac isn't sure if he's edging towards panic or rage. He thinks they may be the same thing with Logan.
Aaron only gets one more chance to keep things civil, or this is over, whether Logan tries to wave him off or not.
"You do realize how much this trial hinges on her testimony, right?" Aaron asks. "About what happened in the car that night? About how she tried to blackmail me with those tapes? Tried to force herself on me?"
Aaron's still smiling, but now it's ice cold.
"So, Logan, you may want to think about what your life is going to be like when I've been acquitted. And I think it's going to depend a lot on what you say on the witness stand, don't you?"
Isaac leans across Logan, deliberately cutting off his line of sight, and gently takes the phone out of his hand. He puts the phone to his own ear and looks at Aaron.
"Logan will tell whoever he wants whatever truth he sees fit. And if, by some chance in hell, you are acquitted, it won't matter, because you won't be laying a hand on him or Veronica ever again."
With that, he slams the phone back down in the cradle and turns back to Logan.
"Come on, time to go."
Logan seems too stunned to argue. He clearly has no idea what just happened. He glances over his shoulder as they leave, unable to help it, watching Aaron watch them leave. Once they get back to the car, he realizes that he's shaking. Isaac watches him for a few moments in silence, then asks,
"Do you want me to drive?"
He's not sure which Logan will want more, to get away from his father or to be in control of his environment.
"No, fuck it!"
Logan turns the key in the ignition and peels out of the parking lot at speeds that many would not consider safe. Isaac hastily puts his seatbelt on.
"Dude, only one of us has superhuman healing abilities."
"You want to get out?" Logan asks. Isaac just gives him a look in response.
"Then shut the fuck up," Logan says,
getting on the highway and heading back towards Neptune.
"It's your car,"
Isaac agrees with a shrug. Apparently, in control of his environment was the winner. After that, he lets the silence stand for a while. It's not like Isaac has ever been a big talker anyway. Logan's speed gradually bleeds away from the manic 90s to the more reasonable 70s as the adrenaline wears off. But when he takes their exit, he stops at the light and just stares into space for a minute.
"Hey, you mind if we just drive for a bit?"
Isaac shakes his head.
"I don't mind."
It's better than Logan pretending nothing was wrong. Without saying anything in response, Logan makes a left and gets on the Pacific Coast Highway. It's a winding road that goes along the ocean, more populated in some parts than others. The traffic doesn't seem to bother him. He just continues to stare out into space. After about 20 minutes, he stops at an overlook, parks the car, and gets out. The ocean is a good 50 feet below, crashing against the rocks.
"My mother," he says, "was so desperate to get away from that jackhole that she threw herself off a fucking bridge."
Isaac follows him, not missing the parallel of wanting to escape his father, and standing on the edge of a nasty drop. He'd like to grab Logan in a bear hug and back them both away from the edge, but he doesn't think it would go over very well. Instead, he moves close enough that he would be able to make a solid grab for Logan if he had to.
"I'm sorry."
He turns so he's mostly facing the water, although he can see Logan in his peripheral vision.
"Do you think she was afraid nobody would help her if she asked?" I don't have a clue what she was thinking. Logan kicks a rock off the edge and watches it fall. I thought about it too, you know. I see what you're thinking over there, but I won't jump. Not because of Veronica or anything sappy or even because I want to live so bad. I just don't want him to feel like he's won. With a little shrug, Isaac doesn't bother to deny that he had been nervous over Logan playing at the edge of the drop. Spite is as good as anything else right now to keep you breathing. Living out of spite at least keeps a person going long enough to find something better. I used to think to myself, well, at least it'll be over someday. Logan picks up a rock and hurls it into the ocean. Like, I would turn 18 and just take off and never see him again. But it never will be. Even if he's convicted, there'll be appeals. And he's just never gonna let me go. Even if he gets sentenced to life in prison, he won't let me go. How do you figure? Isaac asks, honestly curious. I don't think the appeals would really involve you. You're emancipated now. Just cut off contact. He turns to face Logan fully for a minute. Or let someone else do it for you, if you can't. He turns back to the ocean. Because I know it can be a lot harder than it sounds. But I'm pretty sure if you got a restraining order, he wouldn't be allowed to try to contact you. I've kind of enjoyed being the thorn in his side, Logan says, and then gives a shrug. He'd find a way. He gets what he wants, you know? Yeah, I know. Isaac shoves his hands in his pockets. Except in the end, that's not true. You don't belong to him. I guess. Logan throws another rock. Fuck it. If he gets acquitted, I'll just go live with you guys. Okay. The word falls out of Isaac's mouth before it can occur to him that he probably should check with Stiles before making a promise of shelter and protection like that. Because it is a promise, and one he won't take back. I dare him to come after you then. I know, right? Logan laughs. I could just be like, fuck you, Dad, I've got fucking werewolves. This gets a laugh out of Isaac. In this particular case, he should maybe fear Papa Stalinsky more. Are you kidding? Logan asks. You think my dad is going to be afraid of the sheriff? Yeah, that won't happen. Not even a hardcore mofo like this one. Then he's stupid as fuck. Isaac looks down, and then kicks a rock out over the water. It sails as if it were pitched by a professional ball player, rather than idly kicked by a teenage boy. Papa Stalinsky has a thing against child abusers. Doesn't everybody? Logan asks. But seriously, I guess that was always part of my problem. I mean, my dad owns the house, so where would I go? I can't get a restraining order against the dude whose house I live in. True, Isaac says with a nod. But moving from house to house with the rest of the pack stopped feeling weird after a few days. So you... Logan rubbed his hand over the back of his head. You're actually serious about that? I'm like, hey, I'll just go live with you guys and that's totally okay? Yeah. Isaac gives a half shrug and decides not to mention that technically he isn't supposed to invite members into the pack without clearing it with everyone else, particularly Stiles. He's going to be doing some apologizing to his alpha, but he's pretty sure that Stiles won't make him take it back. Papa Stalinsky may ask you some questions, but he won't say no. Logan shakes his head. You guys are weird, he says, but lets it go at that. We're aware, Isaac says, his tone dry and amused. Yeah, well, thanks for going with me today, Logan says, and then heads back towards his car before Isaac can reply. Isaac follows him and gets in. You're welcome. I know how it can be. But he's content to let the subject drop if that's what Logan wants.